Sunny 16 presents.
Welcome to another episode of On Location. This week, we're visiting Anthony Pearson at home as he takes us step by step through his process for making trichromes. Trichromes, in case you don't know, is the technique for making colour pictures using black and white film. It's really cool, and listening to the way Anthony describes it, it sounds like something that we could all have a go at home. If you visit Anthony's Instagram page, which is at DANKSPANGLE, that's at Dankspangle, you can see the pictures that Anthony actually makes during this recording. So well worth checking out. Some beautiful pictures, actually. The trichromes have a really lovely ethereal colour to them. And as I've mentioned on a past backing paper, I think it was, Anthony actually sent me some at one point, and actually I saw them and instantly swiped them and stuck them on the wall, which is a sign of great quality, I think. I hope you enjoy this. I'll speak to you at the end.
Hello. Right. Right, he said decisively. That was decisive, wasn't it? Right, my name's Anthony, and I'm going to talk you through how to make a trichrome. A trichrome is a colour photograph made from black and white photos. So you can make colour photos with your black and white developer, black and white film and black and white development chemicals, which is a good thing, I think. And I started doing it because my local film processing shop shut down for a while. So I was a bit stuck for colour film processing, and I like colour photos. I can develop black and white film at home. But I don't develop colour film at home because, as far as I know, you need water baths and temperature control and lots of chemicals and blicks and yada yada. And I've just never really got into that. But black and white film processing, it turns out, is pretty simple, which I like. So this is how to make your colour photos if all you've got is black and white film and black and white developing kit. What I thought I'd do is talk you through actually taking the photos. I won't talk you through developing them. I'll let you know what I did, though, and then talk you through how to kind of post-process them, I suppose. Because what you need to do is take three photos of the same subject. You take them with a red, a green, and a blue filter. And then you import those into, you develop the film, you scan the film, you import it into Photoshop, into Lightroom, then Photoshop, and load those three photos into the red, green, and blue channels, in a Photoshop document, and you get a colour picture. It is fairly simple. The Photoshop bit is a bit tricky, though, just, organising your documents and just making sure you're loading them in the right way into a document. Because the channels can be a bit fiddly to deal with, so I'll talk you through that bit. Right, but hopefully this should work. Okay, so what I'm going to take a photo of is a gladiolus, and I'm doing the universal hand movement, hand gesture for gladiolus, which is waving my hand around my head like Morrissey, because that's what he used to do on Top of the Pops when I was a kid. That's how old I am. Okay, in my office I've got a desk, which is under a north-facing window, so I've got some nice soft light on the desk. I've got a massive Great Man Photo tripod, one leg on the floor, two legs on the desk, and the central pillar comes out and locks down horizontally, which is great. So what I've got is the film camera suspended over the desk, looking down on the flower. The film camera is a Canon 7S, which I really like. It's a funny thing, it's one of the last film cameras Canon made. It's got FP4 in it, and it's got a 24mm Canon lens on it. The 24 is good. It sounds a bit wide for doing this kind of thing, but actually you can focus pretty close with it. So my flower is on a piece of card. I used to take photos of flowers on white backgrounds, but now I do them on coloured backgrounds. I think it just works a lot better, especially if you get a colour wheel and do a contrasting colour, and that works really well if you want to be a bit sciencey about it. What I've got is a pale piece of pale green card, which is A2. I buy card in big A1 sheets and graphics, so you can get all sorts of nice colours. Then cut it down to whatever size you want. It's really useful for building film masks as well, which I use. We'll get onto that when I do the scanning. Anyway, so my Canon is sat here. It's suspended over the flower, which is lying direct on the card. The Gladiolus is quite a big flower. If it was smaller, I might want to... it's quite hard, actually, just with this tripod arrangement, just the way it's set up, to get the camera really close down onto the card. So what I sometimes do is put the flower on a piece of glass, which is then lifted off the surface of the card by some cut-down toilet roll. So you've got sort of glass on a platform, a gap, then the card, so your flower can sit above. This is also good if you want to make sure that the background, you don't get any of the texture in the background card. It's not such a problem with film, and certainly not when you're doing something like this, because that super fine detail you're probably not going to get anyway, but I do digital photos of flowers as well, which are super fine detail. And if you want you want to lose the texture of the card, you've got to lift the flower off that card surface on a sheet of glass. So that's not a top tip. Wow. You got that for free. Okay, so my camera's facing down on the flower. What I would say is that by the time you set up your tripod, you've got your camera facing down and I'd use manual focus. I've peered through there, I've focused on the flower, I've set my aperture. I do on aperture priority, I let the camera sort out the exposure for itself. It's a soft light and it's not a super contrasty scene. I've turned off the ceiling lights in my office, so it's just the natural light. And so the kind of auto exposure I've always found works absolutely fine for this. I use a kind of a central area rather than a spot. You get, really workable exposures that way. I do want to control the aperture. Some flower, you want a nice dreamy look, so you might want to go for really wide open, so which at this distance is, even with a wide angle lens, is really narrow depth of field, so you'll get a sort of, you get some bits really nicely in focus and the rest of it's kind of dreamy. This one I'm doing at f5.6 because I want to pick up some of the, quite a bit of the detail in the flower. But even then, I'm not going to get the background particularly in focus, or even the whole plant, which is fine. I personally don't use narrower apertures than that. Sometimes I do with digital photos just to get, really nice sharp renditions. But this particular, I think, it's nice to have a bit of depth to it. What I would say as well, by the time you've thought about all of that, it's quite easy to start taking pictures. Without actually looking at your composition too hard, and I've done this a few times, and I've come out with a kind of picture of a flower stuck in the middle of a piece of card. Actually, it's worth taking a break and having a look through the viewfinder, removing it, move your camera up and down, do get a nice composition out of it. Sometimes it's nice things to have things askew, to have bits, have close-ups of some parts of flowers, that kind of straight-on stem flower background. Not necessarily always what you want, although sometimes that's nice. Okay, so my flower's in a nice place. I'm looking down through the viewfinder. I've got it set up. Shutter speed actually is quite slow. So I'm going to put that on the self timer. Right, so now we're ready to take the pictures. I'm going to take three pictures because it's going to be a trichrome. So I've got to screw my filter on the front of the lens with the camera pointing down. So I'm going to do them in the right order. You want to do RGB seems to be, it's an easy order to remember. So I'm going to do the red, the green, and then the blue filter. So let's do red filter first. Now this is a slightly tricky bit, screwing the filters on. And I will say a bit about filters in a second. This one, that's on. So you want to do this without moving the camera in between shots, obviously. Also, what you don't want to do is to drop the filter on the flower and move it. So I do that quite a lot as well, so just be a bit careful of that. Now, as for the filters, I've got cheap ones off eBay. And in fact, the only ones I could find, which are part of a much bigger set, which gave me RGB filters, and it turns out they're really good. They scratch quite easily, and they're a bit dusty, but by the time you stuck a filter on, actually scratches. It's quite tolerant of scratches, this kind of photography. And, just got to get it back on again. But they are screw-in filters. What I would say is make sure that the filters are evenly matched. I have tried it with a cheap set of gels, which would be much easier, because rather than faffing around and screwing it in like I am now, I could just hold the gel or the, you know, the square filter in front of the thing. But I couldn't find any except for really cheap ones. I tried them, and the colours were all over the place, and you'll spend the rest of your life in Photoshop trying to balance the colour channels. Actually, this set of filters I've got are the same density, and they work really well, and I get really good colours out of them. So, yeah, have a look on eBay for those. You just want a set of red, blue, and green filters. So I got the red one on. What else was I going to say? Yeah, I think we're good to go. So let's give that one a tap. Beep, beep, beep. Beep, beep, beep. This particular camera. Oh, good. So I've taken my red picture. I'm going to do the green. While I'm getting the filters swapped over, the film, so FP4, Ilford FP4 works really well. You need a panchromatic film because we're taking photos using, we're expecting to capture red, blue and green information. And panchromatic means that the black and white film is capturing a wide range of wavelengths. If you use, what's the other one? Orthographic? That's probably right. Let's pretend that's right. There are films, more old school black and white films, have your more limited sensitivities, and I think it's generally the red that's missing. If you tried doing this with a really old film, you'd be missing some of the wavelengths and you wouldn't get a colour picture when you brought your pictures into the channels in Photoshop at all. So by taking each of these three photos, we're capturing, although we're capturing as black and white film, what we're doing is capturing the red light, the blue light, and the green light, so your film needs to be sensitive to all those wavelengths. FP4, it turns out, is perfect. It's just a really nice film for doing this. I've tried it with quite a few other films. FP4 is the best I've found so far. Okay, ready for the next picture on the green filter. And what I'm going to say to you next is, now it's time to take the blue photo. So off with that filter, scroll on the blue one. On the blonde without dropping it on the flower and moving it. That was a nice rest, wasn't it? So we've done our three photos now. Obviously, I'm going to take a load of other photos on this film and fill it up before I develop it. Something else I was going to say to you about this as well. Oh, yeah, flowers. Amazingly, some of them wilt so quickly that if you faff around in between shots, the flower will move. So poppies in particular, I found, they kind of, you lie them on a piece of paper and they just kind of collapse as you watch them. So you might have to be a bit quick. Other flowers are really robust. Dried flowers work really well, but tend to be less colourful, so it's a bit less exciting for a trichrome. Although I have got a really nice peony that's, the leaves have gone a really nice sage green and the rest of it's gone a sort of dirty, rotten pink. Which I think looks really good. So dried flowers are good to use. Also, when you're taking pictures of flowers, you'll find they won't necessarily sit where you want them to. So, you know, I use blue tack, pins, weights, bits of toilet roll, masking tape, whatever it takes to kind of strap them down and keep them in the position you want. Right, so I'm going to finish the rest of my film and I'm going to press pause for a sec and I'll be back in the future. Hello, it's me back from the past. Okay, I filled up that film with photos and I have developed it. So my home developing is a dark bag and a Patterson tank. It's FP4 I've developed in Rodinol, which is old school, which I really like because it's nice and contrasty. You get nice dense negatives out of it. People say it's grainy, but with FP4 I really don't think it is that grainy. I mean, you can see grain obviously if you zoom in on it, but you don't look at the photos and think, wow, that's a super grainy old school kind of newspaper photo or anything like that. FP4 I think it's lovely. It's slow, of course. Certainly if you live in Britain like what I do, it is a bit limiting, but you know, I'm working on a tripod here, so I don't care. Right, so I've developed my film, developed in Rodinol, right, so I've got my film now. And now I'm going to scan it. When I say scan it, I'm stood in front of the same desk that I took the photo of the flower on. I've got a light pad on it, which is an A2, iPad. It was really cheap off eBay. I've got a card mask over that, so there's just this kind of square cut out in the middle of it for the light to shine through. And I've got another mask sat on top of that, and that's a thing I've made from cardboard. So it's three layers of cardboard, but pretty much what you've got is a slightly over 35mm frame hole in it, and then slots to slide the film through. And what I get from this is a bit of the film edges, not the whole film edge. I'm not a complete hipster, just a bit of the film edge, because I'm a bit of a hipster. So really, I slide the, I've got a channel in this piece of card, I slide my film through it, the light is shining through it. I've got a travel tripod, I use a different tripod for this for some reason, set up with the column reversed, and mounted on that is my Sony A7 R2. Just about remembered what it is. I've got an adapter on that, and I'm using a Canon FD 50mm macro lens to photograph the negatives. So I'm going to slide the film through my thing, across this little light window. I've turned off all the lights in my office. I've drawn the curtains and extra. I've got these reflections on film are, you know, a problem. So I've got a poster tube cut down, lined with black paper that then fits over my mask, and the camera lens points down into that. So, you know, a bit of a contraption here to photograph the negatives, but it really works for me. So, got to be a bit careful with the focus. So make sure you're focusing on the film grain or, you know, one of the sprockets that you can see at the edge and not the picture, just in case you're focusing on trying to focus on an out-of-focus picture. I use fairly narrow aperture. I'm using f8 for this, which I think works quite well. Some of the problems with this is if you've got any scratches or anything on your light box, I've also got another piece of translucent perspex in between the light box and the film and the film holder. If you've got any scratches or dirt on those, every single one of your negatives will have, that will come through as either light, bright spots or dark spots or whatever, depending. So make sure everything's clean, make sure the translucent surfaces are clean. The other nice thing about this mask is it holds the film off that surface, so it's, the film doesn't touch the piece of transparent perspex that the light's shining through. If it does touch, you'll get Newton rings, which are those colourful kind of rainbow things. And they're a complete pain to get rid of. You can Photoshop them out, but you're into full-scale kind of compositing kind of tools then, and it's, you know, you'd only bother if it was the world, if it was, you know, a photo you really wanted to keep and you had no other choice. Anyway, it's not a problem here because I've lifted the film off. Right, so I'm going to scan, take photos of these pictures. I've got the film the right way around, so I'm starting with the first photo I took on the film and the right way up. This is a good idea when you're doing these because we're working with groups of three photos, and it's just how I took them in. Remember, I took them in RGB order, so I know I'm scanning them in that same order. So of my three photos, I know which is red, which is green, and which is blue, because, you know, if you start photographing things in odd orders and mixing up your negatives and stuff, it's going to be really hard to find which photo goes in which channel. Just so be a bit organized. Right, you'll talk to me from the future again in just a moment. See ya. Right, I have photographed my negatives. So I am now sat at my computer, and I shall talk you through what I do here. So, this is my workflow. I've tried quite a few different workflows for this, working just in Photoshop, doing more in Lightroom, more in Photoshop. So, you know, I've been around the houses with this, so I'm going to talk you through what I've ended up with. So it's after a bit of trial and error. So it's not just kind of a random process. It's a process I've arrived at that seems to actually work. Good heavens. Okay, so what I do, I've imported, so if you remember, what I did just then was photograph my negatives on a light box, so the photos are now inside my A7R. I've just plugged that into the computer, and I'm going to import those into Lightroom. Now, I import them into, I can talk to you about something useful while it's doing it, that's a good idea. The reason I bring them into Lightroom is because that's kind of where I organize my photos. So I use it as much as a photo library as I do as a tool for editing and post-processing. So I import the photos. I give them a You know, like your film, when you get your film back from the developers, it's got a number on. So I give each of my films a number, but that's just based on the date. So this is, you know, whatever the date is. So I do month, day, year, just because that orders things nicely. I can then put a sticker on the, I roll the negatives back up. I mean, the negatives aren't cut, they're on a long roll. I should have mentioned that when I was scanning, shouldn't I? So I roll them back up, put them back in the film pod, and to put a sticker on with this same number on so I can find them if I need to. And then stick those in a drawer and never look at them again. You never know, might want to rescan something one day. Right, the photos are now in Lightroom. Now, I've tried inverting them in Lightroom and noodling with them in Lightroom. I just find it better to do it in Photoshop. The tools are better. I've kind of saved some tools in there. It's easier to invert. It's much easier to do dust correction and other kind of, you know, fix dust and scratches and stuff. pardon me, in Photoshop. Right, so I've got my negatives in. As I said, they're all in the right order, so I know that the three, I'm looking at the three pictures of the gladiolus. I can never remember off the top of my head. Of the gladiolus, so I'm going to select the three pictures and I am going to open them in Photoshop, which might take a minute, so I don't know if you just bear with me. The reason I'm talking you through this is so I'm too lazy to make any notes about what I'm telling you. So my notes are me actually doing it. So, right, I've selected the three photos I'm interested in. I've selected them in Lightroom, just the three, and I right-click on them. And there is an option, assuming you've got Photoshop. I think other photo editing packages are available, and they actually be much the same process. But from Lightroom to Photoshop is really nice because you can actually, they're kind of joined together. So I can click on the three photos, right click, and go edit in Adobe Photoshop. Now Photoshop's just opened. I should have had that open already, then I wouldn't have to blabber on quite so much. It is opening. Photoshop's thinking. Great, and we've now got the three photos open. So the way I've got Photoshop set up is I've got my desktop, I'm looking at the picture, and the three photos are kind of tabs at the top of the area there. So I can click between them, and I've got my three black and white photos as in the tabs there. First thing, I want to make sure that they're going to line up. I'm going to be combining these three into one photograph. If you're scanning on a scanner with any sort of decent holder, I imagine your pictures are going to come out straight and they're all going to be correctly kind of nice and straight and well oriented and stuff as you've got them. Because I'm using my Shonky Homemade Card negative holder, they do move a little bit. So I'm just clicking on each photo and just seeing, yeah, they are moving a bit. So one of them slightly rotated from the others, I think. So I'm going to go to each one. I'm going to use my straighten tool in Photoshop just to make sure, just run it down one edge and make sure they're all straightened along the same edge. And then the photos will match up. The only variable is actually the rotation here. I'm not shooting them from different angles or at different distances or anything. So all I've got to make sure is that they're, you know, they line up along the same edge. Good, that's done. So what I've got in Photoshop, I've made some presets, some actions of my own. The first one I'm going to apply is to make a black and white negative. So in Photoshop, you can invert the image. And having inverted it, I'm now going to make it black and white because I took the photos with my own A7R, which is a color digital camera. So it's a color JPEG. So actually it's going to be sort of blue and black and gray and, you know, it's going to have a tint to it. I'm going to make it. So first of all, I'm going to invert it so it looks like so it's the right way around. So we've now got a positive image. I say that, I better actually start doing it rather than just talking to you. So I'm doing the red one, the green one, and the blue one. Like I say, I've got my images in order, so I know which one I'm working with. Right, so what I'm looking at now are three black and white photos that are now positives. They're the right way around. So like I say, I've got my film edges as well, which I photographed. So my mask just shows a bit of the edge of the film. I've also got, you know, snippets of the picture before and after each frame. And I tend to leave those on. Like I say, a bit hipster, but, you know, it's what I like.
This is also really useful because I know the edge of the film should be absolutely black. I know the surround around that should be absolutely white. So I've got a really nice point at which, in a while, when we do our levels, that we can work from. So I've got my three black and white pictures. So what I'm going to do now, this is the tricky bit. So the first picture, I'm going to go to the red one. I'm going to select all and copy. Copy. Right, now I'm going to select the final picture, which is the blue one, one taken with the blue filter. Okay, on the final picture, I've got a layers panel up, and you'll see there's a tab next to layers called channels. You click that, you open it up, you've got the it says RGB, it's got four different channels in it, actually. It's got the combined one RGB, then a red one, a green one, and a blue one. So remember, I've copied the red one. So on the blue picture, select the red channel and paste. And a little bit of magic's happened already, because in the tiny thumbnail on the RGB, I can see some colours appeared. Sweet. Right. Now select the second of our pictures, the green one. Copy it. Select all. Copy. Photoshop wake up. Thank you. Back to the blue picture, the final one. And in this one, I now select the green channel and paste. Now, obviously, I don't need to copy and paste the blue channel because I'm already in the blue picture. So what I've started with, I've got my blue picture, I've opened up the channels, and I've put in the red and the green picture. So now, if I select the RGB at the top, it selects all the channels. I've got a colour picture! It's a colour picture! Now, again, if your scanner lines everything up beautifully and every frame is in the same place, you'll instantly have a nicely matched colour picture. Mine are a bit all over the place, so they're not. So I need to realign them. So sticking in the channels, I'm going to select the red channel, then hit the eyedropper next to the RGB one so that all the channels are visible, but I've only got the red selected. I'm going to clear my selection, which was there because I copied and pasted, and select the Move tool in Photoshop. I'm going to zoom in on my picture. And then if you just move around, you can see you're just moving the red channel, which looks cyan now because we've inverted it. It's not going to head to that brand, but just accept it as being true. And so I can line that up. Now, the other strongest colour is going to be the magenta, which was your green channel. So as you move the red one around, you'll be able to see when it's lined up with the magenta. And sometimes, this flower, I can see some stamens, are they? I've done a degree in biology, and I can't remember what this bit of the plant's called. I'm going to call them stamens. Now, they're quite detailed, and they were the bit I was focusing on the flower. So there's a lot of detail in there. So I can really zoom in on that and then use the keys on the keyboard to make sure that it's absolutely aligned. If it's out of alignment, you'll see a kind of blue edge or red edge on the thing, depending which channel you're moving where it is. Right, I've got my red and my green channels absolutely aligned now. That's lovely. Also, when they come in alignment, it looks as though the photo sort of snaps into focus a little bit as well. You'll be able to see when it's all lined up nicely. Okay, so that's my red and green. So now I select the blue channel. I've got all the channels visible, but just the blue channel selected. Now I can do the same. So I've got a yellow kind of version of the plant floating off to one side. So the blue, because we're dealing with negatives, turned into yellow. We just accept that. So I can now move the blue layer around. Again, it's useful to zoom in. Find a bit where you can really see some contrast and you can see the layers you're working with. Sometimes you can't really see it. You're just kind of moving stuff around and it's all just looking blurred. The nice thing about plants as well is I'm taking them against a solid background. So usually you've got a nice clean area where you can really see what you're moving around. And sometimes if the negatives are way out of whack with each other, it is actually quite hard to see what you're actually moving, especially with the yellow, the blue channel, which turns yellow, tends to be quite faint. But now I've got my yellow channel lined up as well, and it now looks like a colour picture. If anything moved, you'll have some weird colour fringing. If you're doing a street scene and things were moved, you can expect some fringing. If you took a picture with clouds in, they'll probably have moved between the photos and you'll get psychedelic clouds. All of that, I think, is good. I like all of that stuff. It seems to be best when it works by accident as well. If you go out looking for that kind of thing, it seems to look kind of wrong. That's photography, isn't it? The accidents often look best. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm just a rubbish photographer relying on accidents to get anything half decent. That's depressing, isn't it? Right, I'm just going to go and cry for a bit. Okay, I'm back. Okay, so I've got all my pictures lined up, so I can go off the channels and back to layers again. And now we're into the normal world of Photoshop. So what I usually do with most photos, I apply a tiny bit of a sort of high-pass sharpening filter. I don't always do that. Certainly with some films, it just makes things look awful because just all the grain comes out. Like I say, FB4 is not that grainy, even developed with Rodinal. So you can give it a little bit of a high-pass filter, just a touch, and then do it in its own layer and make it sort of do it like 30% or something, so even knock it back even a bit more, but just gives it a little bit more edge. What we really need to do with this, and what I have to do with all the photos that I, this process of photographing negatives with my camera, I do need to add some levels. So I'm going to add a levels layer to it. I'm going to drag up the left-hand side of that, which will make the black stark. Like I say, I've got an edge of the picture, but the frame edge I know should be solid black, which I'm not too worried about that right now. What I want is to get the main part of the picture looking good. So I'm going to drag the right way in because for some reason it's off that end of the scale. So I'm going to pull that in, and that's looking quite sweet in the middle there now. This is where actually your picture kind of comes to life. There's a lovely bit where you bring the things together and get your colours, but quite often you just still got a fairly murky, dull picture. When you start putting the levels right and bringing, crushing the blacks a bit and bringing the whites up, then it starts to, really starts to sing. Oh, isn't that sweet? How artistic I is. Okie doke, so I've just one round of levels there. So I'm happy with the picture in the middle, but the frame edge isn't a jet black. It's still a little bit grey, so I'm going to do another levels layer, but I'm going to mask that off and just bring up the edge of the frame and make it true black. So another level there, bring up the, make sure, crush all the black so that my black edge is black. The other thing I want is the whites around to be pure white as well. So I've made books out of these kind of photos and these kind of negatives, and if you don't get the white, pure white, you'll end up with this, you'll see it on the page. So quite often I kind of print these with the, like it's a photo of the negative sat in the middle of the page. So you want the edge of that to be pure white to blend with the page, so you haven't got a kind of edge where it's a sort of dirty white. So again, I can bring the whites way up here. I can crush the blacks, but then I'm going to make a mask out of it anyway. So the middle of my picture is fine. I'm just going to use the paintbrush to paint out the borders to make sure the black of the border is proper black. And that actually is quite quick. Done. Now, one more layer. So now I'm just going to put another layer in. I use layers in Photoshop a lot. I learned a lot of this Photoshop stuff from Phlearn, Phlearn, something like that, phlearn.com. Look at YouTube. There's a guy there called Aaron Nate, who does these great tutorials. There's a ton of them. It's really worth learning. I'm not that kind of create new worlds in Photoshop person. I really am a develop photos starting, my negatives are the raw material, but they do need some work. Certainly once you scan them in the way I do, you need to work on them in Photoshop, and you will have dust, you will have scratches, and the stuff he teaches you, he does hardcore photo compositing, but those skills are great for fixing dust and scratches. And just doing the stuff I did with the border, all I've done is make sure my border's proper black. I don't think that's, it's not compositing or creating a new world, but it is putting the picture right, I'd say, fixing problems with my photographing of the negatives in the first place. But anyway, so I've got to, follow those things and you'll learn about non-destructive editing, you'll learn about how to use levels, there's tons of great stuff, and he's really funny as well. And he's not paying me to say that, I wish he would. Okie doke. Right, so I've got another layer, and I'm going to use that to fix the dust. So I've gone to dust, so I'm going to my spot healing brush. And the spot healing brush in Photoshop is much better than the spot healing brush in Lightroom, which is pretty good, but it's good just for getting rid of a single spot. This will get rid of sort of hairs and scratches. When you're doing this trichrome stuff, if you've got different hairs and scratches on each negative, you end up with kind of psychedelic hairs and scratches, so you've got pure red ones, blue, green, whatever. It's really worth, I think, if you like your picture and you're going to print it or share it with people, certainly if you're going to print it, it's worth spending the time going through and fixing every little bit of dust. And I find the more dust and scratches you fix, the more the picture just kind of, the blurred background just becomes lovely and the whole thing just kind of again, it's another step where you suddenly take a leap forwards with the picture, I think, and what was a kind of slightly muddy, scratchy picture suddenly looks nice when you've got rid of all the dust and scratches. This one's really quite clean, which is amazing because I dry my photos by hanging them up by the back door from a clothes peg. Why they aren't covered in dust, I don't know. I've got much less dust on them than I do from stuff I get back from when I send them away to get them developed. So this one's actually pretty good. There's a few weird artifacts, but we're good. When that's done, you want to merge all your layers, because I'm about to save it. If you don't merge your layers, it's going to save it as a great big fat Photoshop document. And you may want to save it as a fat Photoshop document so you come back and fill it with the layers later. I don't. I'm kind of, you know, I've done this enough to know that I'm kind of happy with it as it is. I can always go back to my original negatives if I want to redo one of these kind of trichromes. So I compress a layer, I merge all the layers. So I've just got a flat image. And then when I hit save, it will then save it back to Lightroom and open it in Lightroom as a big fat TIFF. I think you can change what it saves at in the preferences somewhere. But yeah, save is finished, so I can just close that. And boom. Yeah, so I've closed in Photoshop and it's now opened in Lightroom. I've still got two pictures open in Photoshop because if you remember, we're only working on the blue one. The blue one's the one that's turned into our lovely colour photo. I can just close those without saving changes, the red and the green layers. So I'm just doing that and then I'm going to quit Photoshop because it's a memory hog. And it also takes, for some reason, about 6 hours to close itself. Okay, back in Lightroom. I've got my photo has opened, lovely. There's quite a lot of space around it. So when I photographed, I should have said this when I was doing the scanning bit. When I photographed the negative, I do it quite close. It doesn't completely fill the frame though. It's just easier to adjust that way. The macro lens will focus in the right place to get it to absolutely fill, but I don't because I want frame edges. So really, so what I'm doing now in Photoshop, in Lightroom, sorry, is finally cropping it down a bit. I want to keep a white border. I want to keep my black frame edges because I like them. If you don't keep them. And then just a tiny tweak. I almost always find myself upping the... I almost always, he said. Except for Lightroom's just gone a bit weird on me. Oh, yeah, I'm doing it here. Okay. I almost always find myself just upping the exposure a little bit. I don't know why. After I've finished work, and I've got both, all the documents were both opened on white background, so, you know, I should be looking the same. But nonetheless, every time I come to the light, to get back in Lightroom, I think, yeah, it could be a bit brighter. So up the brightness, maybe play with the shadows a little bit. You know, for these flowers, it's sometimes just a little bit more shadow, to give them a bit more modelling. Quite often, if the edge isn't pure white, I'll then boost the whites and maybe a tiny touch of clarity. But you've got to be careful with that. If you zoom it up, you just get it really harsh. That clarity, I think, works worse when you've actually got grain. And one of the things about doing the trichrome is, although my three pictures are identical, I've merged them together, so the flower's all lined up and turns into a colour flower. Clearly, each bit of grain hasn't lined up, so there can be some, you know, you haven't got the same kind of grain. If you get too harsh with it, so if in my unsharp mask or if in Lightroom here, I started whacking up the clarity a lot or really bringing up the contrast and things, that kind of trichrome grain can look a bit weird. So, but anyway, I tend not to go too hard with sharpness anyway. I like the soft, one of the things I like about these photos is the kind of soft feel you get out of them. And now my photo's in Lightroom. I can do what I want with it. So I've got it set up to, you know, anything I do an edit on is automatically set up, if I want to post to Flickr. So I'll then export it to Flickr, and then from Flickr I can export large versions. I'm not really worried about what Flickr does to its large versions. They look actually really good quality, and I've printed from them before. But nonetheless, by the time it gets to Flickr, it's a pretty big JPEG, but then I'll export that, and that's what I'll use to share to Instagram. I think that's the whole process, you know. I wonder if this is still recording. Oh, it is. That's good. That was quite long. Damn it. I'm so sorry. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. Okay, my name's Anthony. You can find me on Flickr. I am Dank Spangle, all one word, DankSpangle, Dank Spangle. Don't look up Dank Spangle in Urban Dictionary because it's filthy. Not why I called myself Dank Spangle. I was kind of thinking of a depressed cowboy. I invented the name when I was like 20 or something, a long time ago. So I'm Dank Spangle on Instagram, also on Flickr. And you send me a message on Instagram, show me your trichromes. If you make a trichrome, show me. I'd really love to see them. You can, if you go to my Instagram, you won't have to scroll far down the page before you'll find some trichromes, because I make them all the time. This one we've been talking through as a trichrome of a gladiolus. So see if you can, there's a few of those in there. It will be one of those you've just been listening to. Thank you. See ya.
Thank you very much to Anthony for doing that for us. If you'd like to write to us about that show, or indeed if you've got your own idea for a show, then please do get in touch with us at sunny16presents@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Music for the show is Positive Fat Bass Intro Loop by Winnie the Moog, used with a Creative Commons license. I want to say thank you to Billy Sanford for the intro to this week's show. We will be back next week with the return of Underexposed, Rachel's show. That will be out on Tuesday, so look forward to that. Thanks for listening.